My name is Tony Greenstein. I've been a long-standing Palestine solidarity activist. I was the first Jewish person to be expelled from the Labour Party as part of the anti-Semitism, the false anti-Semitism campaign. And more relevantly, I, together with about 15 people, we met in a room in the University of London Union in 1982, just before the Israel's invasion of Lebanon, and we decided to set up Palestine Solidarity Campaign. So I'm one of about 15 original co-founders of the campaign.
Well, it's strange you say that, because most of these sorts of campaigns, Tony, happen after some calamitous event like the invasion of Lebanon. How come you were there starting a campaign before it had even begun?
Ah, good question. The reason was because before the invasion, there was a kind of mini invasion, but Israel, or an incursion, and Israel pulled out. And we actually thought that might be the precursor of the invasion itself. In fact, I mean, Israel was looking for a pretext, any pretext. And the pretext that occurred was the attempted assassination of the Israeli ambassador to London, Shlomo Argov. It had nothing to do with the PLO. It was a renegade who was living in Baghdad. But that was enough to provide the pretext for the invasion of Lebanon, because Israel wants to go in desperately and take out the PLO. So that is how we came to meet just before the invasion.
Okay, well, this is, I mean, you're talking about, 35 years or something of this campaign.
40 years.
Yeah. Is it now 40 years? Crikey. It's because it's been an ever-increasing struggle, more and more restrictions on Palestinian lives. Can you just put it into context? Because I know when the original Israeli state was set up in the 1940s, there was an understanding that, even if you go right back to the Balfour Declaration, that there was a potential problem between Arabs and Jews, and that this was absolutely enshrined and promised to be, not an issue. The idea being that Jews wanted to live in harmony with Arabs, the Zionist Jews would do that.
Well, that was a theory, of course, but Israel, I mean, Zionism was a settler colonial movement. It was founded on the kind of slogan that it was a land, Palestine was a land without a people, for a people without a land. So that was a lie. Were two lies. Jews did have countries where they lived. And secondly, Palestine was not empty, anything but it. And people like Ehad Ha'am had warned in the 1890s, the early 1890s, that Palestine was not empty. But to the Zionists, like all colonialists, the indigenous population was invisible. So to them, it was an empty land. So Zionism never intended to sit down in harmony with the Palestinians. Transfer, the expulsion of the Palestinians, was on the agenda and was discussed internally throughout the whole Zionist history. It didn't suddenly arise in 1948 with the creation of a state. This was a permanent fixture of Zionism, how to get rid of the Arabs to make it a Jewish state. And the other thing is to understand is Zionism wasn't a Jewish idea, although people think of it today. It was a creation of Christian fundamentalism, the evangelicals. They were the ones who were eager to get the Jews to settle in the Middle East. Why? Because it was adjacent to the Suez Canal, a strategic asset, the main route to India at that time in the British Empire. So, I mean, that's how it began. So the most ardent Zionists were not themselves Jewish.
Well, OK, so over 40 years of Palestine Solidarity Campaign, what were the key moments, do you think, Tony?
In that, well, I mean, there are a number of key moments. There was the Oslo Accords, which I consider the greatest disaster for the Palestinians since the Nakba itself, the expulsion in 1948-9. Obviously, the first and the second intifadas. But I also think, I mean, when one looks back, I mean, in 1982, very few people were aware of who the Palestinians were. Today, everyone knows who the Palestinians are. So politically, Zionism today, I think in Israel, is on the defensive, which is why we're seeing this anti-Semitism nonsense. Yeah, they have no way of defending demolishing Palestinian homes to make way for Jewish settlers. So what do? You accuse your opponents of anti-Semitism. It's the only trick they have up the sleeve. But as long as they're supported by the Western establishment, the British and the American imperialists, the European Union and so on, then of course Zionism will survive until a mass movement arises, which will persuade our rulers that Israel, it's too high a price to pay to support it. Just as in South Africa, because if you remember the battle against apartheid there, British and American leaders, Reagan and Thatcher, they believed in constructive engagement, not in sanctions. But it was a mass movement that eventually ensured that apartheid gave way. But also there were strong factors inside South Africa itself. So there have been many milestones in Israel's colonization of the rest of Palestine, which is what the West Bank and the Gaza and the Golan Heights are. But there has been a vigorous struggle and a vigorous solidarity movement. And of course, the initiation of BDS, Boycott, Divestment and Sanctions, in 2005 marked a turning point, because BDS was what did it for South Africa.
But from the PLO on, you know, right through to Hamas, etc., even Hezbollah, you know, the Israeli state has really had to put up with very militant Arabs. And it isn't really surprising that there's been this enormous divide between Arabs and Jews.
Well, I wouldn't call it Arabs and Jews. I would say, I mean, Israel calls itself a Jewish state, but in what sense is it a Jewish state? It's a Jewish supremacist state based on racial supremacy. But ordinary Jews outside Israel, although the majority support Israel, they don't have no vested stake in it. I mean, increasing numbers. I mean, in America, 40% of young Jews call Israel an apartheid state. I mean, there are significant minorities, but, you know, even if no Jews supported Israel in the West would continue to support Israel because it's in their interest to do so. As Al Haig, Reagan's Secretary of State, put it, Israel is an unsinkable aircraft carrier and cheap at the price. And that is the reality of what is happening.
Well, look, you know, you have left this organization, Tony, that you helped set up back 40 years ago. Why have you done that? I understand they've been changing their constitution. So I know it may be a bit dull to go into the details of it, but what is the new constitution that the Palestine Solidarity Campaign have voted through? And what about the procedures, the way it was done?
Well, the way it was done was disgraceful. And it was rammed through a conference, a Zoom conference, where no one could see each other, no one could speak or chat with each other or contact each other, so they had no horizontal contact. And the only people who had any contact with the members who attended were the executive and the small officers group, including its director, Ben Jamal, who had direct access to them. So it was a classical mechanism of control, and Zoom offers all sorts of possibilities to those are control freaks to control the agenda and the meetings. I mean, we see that in the Labour Party, where meetings have been shut down or people arbitrarily removed by Labour Party bureaucrats on Starmer's orders. It's as simple as that. So this technology can be very good and very useful, and we can see each other like we are doing now, and you can contact people and have speakers from abroad very easily in a way you couldn't do with physical meetings. But there are democratic drawbacks to it as well. And PSE exploited it to the maximum. I mean, the problem with the Constitution is that it gives more power to the executive. The executive draws up all the regulations, the code of conduct, all the methods of controlling its members. So instead of the executive being accountable to the membership, it's the membership which is becoming accountable to the executive. And that's exactly not the way to build a mass movement in support of the Palestinians. If that mass movement doesn't have democracy at its core, it will go nowhere. And one of the consequences there is the political blindness of those who run Palestine Solidarity Campaign. They really believe that if they win the battle of public opinion, then the government will shift. Well, the governments don't shift because of public opinion unless it's in their interest to do so. So British foreign policy is really not susceptible to public opinion unless there is a mass campaign from below. And that's what PSC will never do and cannot do. And that's why it has condemned Palestine Action. It's waged an 18-month war against Palestine Action, a small group which grew up, a direct action group, and has had remarkable success against Israel's Elbit arms factories, which are situated in Britain. One of them, Oldham, has been forced to close because they simply could not operate. And that is a very, I don't say that's the only tactic that can be used. There are many things you can do, but direct action is an important component of any campaign, as it was against apartheid, with people running onto rugby pitches, threatening cricket pitches and so on. So to rule it out, as PSC have done in practice, and to show utter contempt for the membership, meant that I, as one of the co-founders, felt I could no longer be a member.
But this is a fast-moving world, Tony. I mean, the executive will say, won't they, look, we need a bit more power as an executive in order to move things along quickly. We can't go around, you know, consulting all the members on every single move. This makes us a more live and able to react to events as they happen.
Well, unfortunately, that's not true. If anything, they've been very slow to react to events. All the major victories have happened in many ways despite Palestine solidarity. In Brighton, we had a 2-year-long campaign against SodaStream, which was an Israeli multinational which had a shop in Brighton. They'd opened it. And we had the Sussex Friends of Israel and all sorts of Zionists come down from London and elsewhere to join the Zionists in a counter picket. But after 2 years, we prevailed. The company pulled out. We got really no support from the executive of Palestine Solidarity Campaign. And I say that has been the same with Palestine Action. When it came to the anti-Semitism campaign, which I'm sure you're aware of, since 2015, it was launched against Jeremy Corbyn, but it's had far wider ramifications. PSC was simply nowhere to be seen. It was completely intimidated by the campaign. And so the constitution, which I reject, with the new constitution, defines anti-Semitism in Britain now as a form of racism on a par with Islamophobia and any other form of racism. And it's not. Anti-Semitism in Britain is a form of prejudice. It's not a form of state racism, which is the kind of racism that really counts, where people get deported because of the colour of their skin or their origin. Jews are not harassed by the police in the same way that black people or Muslims are. So there are all sorts of reasons. And PSC is unable, if you like, to work with anti-racist organisations. Black Lives Matter passed it by. So it's extremely slow to react. And that's the problem when you're not democratic. You're not accountable and people cannot actually have influence from the grassroots. And that's what's important in any campaign, the grassroots membership.
Now, he died over Christmas 2021, Tony, but Desmond Tutu said some amazing things about apartheid in South Africa and he in Israel. And he, of course, lived right through the liberation in South Africa and black majority rule and all that. And he said something which pretty much, I mean, amazed me, in fact, shocked me when he said it. He said that the apartheid going on in Israel against the Palestinians was actually worse than that against the blacks in South Africa. And it can only come from somebody like him to say that, really, in that the Israelis want the Palestinians gone. They don't want them, to work for them as slaves or whatever. They just want them gone, which is a more extreme. I wonder what you make of Tutu's statement. And if so, how come there's so little political action here in Britain for a form of apartheid, which, according to Tutu, is far, far worse?
One of the reasons is, of course, the mass media deliberately ignore the reports that have come out just in the last year from B'Tselem, the major Israeli human rights group, from Human Rights Watch, from Amnesty International, and now from the Harvard University Law Clinic, all of which say Israel is an apartheid state. There is almost unanimity across human rights groups that Israel is an apartheid state. Not only, of course, Desmond Tutu, but just about all the South African, the veterans of the struggle against apartheid, Mandla Mandela, the grandson of Nelson Mandela, Ronnie Casrils, who was the commander of their military wing, Umkhonto Wey Sizwe, who was also himself Jewish. They've all said South African apartheid can't hold a candle to what Israel is today. Israel has far, far greater control over the Palestinians. It has hundreds of checkpoints limiting movement within the West Bank. It bombs refugee camps from the air and shells them from the ground with tank shells. That didn't happen in South Africa. I mean, UN Anti-Racism Day was instituted in, I think, 1966 to commemorate the Sharpeville massacre of 69 black Africans in 1960. But the Palestinian Great Return March from Gaza, which was unarmed, peaceful, and so on, Israel placed snipers on the Gaza fence, and they shot and killed 300, and they injured thousands, and they deliberately injured them with ammunition designed to cause the maximum damage to internal organs, with illegal ammunition. None of this gets criticized because Israel is, as Alexander Haig said, the America's unsinkable aircraft carrier. It is the bastion of the American and the British and the West presence in the Middle East. And today we have the Arab regimes, let's not forget the collaborators, all of whom are now signing up peace agreements with Israel and cooperating and collaborating openly. So the Palestinians are in a very different situation to the black South Africans, because they're much weaker and much isolated, and Israel is much stronger than the South African regime is. So we need even more vigorous campaigns in the West, which don't kowtow to the establishment. And when PSC puts Zionists like Emily Thornberry or Lisa Nandy or even Keir Starmer on its platform, I ask, what the hell are you doing? Why are you doing this? Do you really think that you can win them over? It's stupid from every point of view, but PSC believes they can somehow join the British establishment. They can win them over by arguments. I mean, this is just nonsense.
Tony, you've come out with what many would say is an anti-Semitic trope there, this idea that Israel is somehow got an amazing kind of leverage, almost control over the mass media.
No, I don't say that at all. It's not Israel that has a control, nor is it the Zionist lobbies which have a control. It is because it's in the interests of Western imperialism, our interests, if you like, British capitalism in the Middle East, are with the Israeli state, not with the Palestinians. I mean, that is the problem. I mean, the Zionist lobby here, and you can go through the different lobby organizations, BICOM, Labour Friends of Israel, Jewish Labour Movement, Community Security Trust, Campaign Against Anti-Semitism. But often they seem very powerful. But the reason they seem powerful is because they get their power from singing from the same hymn sheet as the establishment itself. And that's really important to mention. It's not that Israel controls the media. It's that what Israel does is aligned with the media's own narratives, so that when it comes to war crimes in Ukraine, of course, the mass media is up in arms. It's a war crime to invade another country. You know, the International Criminal Court has said it's going to launch its own investigation. But when did it launch an investigation into Iraq or Afghanistan or all the other countries, Libya, where the West has invaded, bombed, destroyed, and so on? So we face, of course, a mass hypocrisy. But no, it's very difficult to be anti-Semitic about Israel. I mean, unless you say what Israel does is because of the inherent nature of being Jewish as a Jewish state. Apart from that, it's really difficult. I mean, people support the Palestinians because of what Israel does to them. Anti-Semitism is a complete nonsense. It's a defamation.
I mean, about 5 years ago, in 2017, we had quite an incredible programme about the Israel lobby in London, even with Alan Duncan, who was Foreign Office Minister at the time, a Conservative, explaining that there had been pressure put on by the Israel lobby to get him removed from office. This is by Shai Masot, who was the political attaché at the Israeli embassy at the time. He very quickly left the country after this documentary was produced. There was also a rather large, I think it was £1 million slush fund in order to effect change, pro-Israel change in the Labour Party, revealed in this undercover film. The only thing is, the film was made by Al Jazeera, who are based in Qatar, not by the British media. Why is this, Tony?
Well, the British media and the BBC in particular won't go anywhere near it. Channel 4 did have a programme, I think it was about 2009, and it was hosted by Peter Oborne, you may remember it. But apart from that programme, there's been, of course, nothing on the Israel lobby. So, Al Jazeera's two programmes, one in the United States on the United States Zionist lobby, and one on what the British lobby was doing. But it only showed, that programme only showed a partial picture of what, if you like, the Zionist lobby was doing. What it didn't show was, if you like, the involvement of the British state and the American state and intelligence agencies in a joint and concerted campaign to overthrow Jeremy Corbyn. So you saw one side, but you didn't see, if you like, the other actors involved. And I suspect maybe in 30, 40 years' time, some enterprising young Guardian journalist will do a Freedom of Information Act and get the information out, if not from Britain, then from the American archives, and then we'll know the full story. I'll be dead then and you'll be dead then, but the truth will eventually come out. But by then, it won't really matter, will it? I have no doubt that what Israel was doing, what Shai Masot was doing, was in coordination with the British state and the American state. That's why Johnson made, and Theresa May, Johnson was Foreign Secretary, I think, at the time, they made absolutely no fuss. Now, if it had been a Russian who'd been talking about taking down a cabinet minister, there would have been an almighty row. So, I mean, it's clear that what Israel does and is doing has the approval, by and large, of the British government and the British state.
So, what do you make of the cancel culture we've now got around, for example, with you leading the way in a way with, expulsions from the Labour Party? We're seeing so many Jews being expelled from the Labour Party for anti-Semitism. What is going on?
Well, if you remember rightly, Keir Starmer came to power became leader of the Labour Party, promising to root out anti-Semitism. Which, of course, was a lie because there was no anti-Semitism or trivial amount, nothing to be bothered about any more than historically there's been far greater anti-Semitism, if you want to know. It was about removing opponents of Israel. I mean, Starmer said he's a Zionist without qualification in an interview with the Times of Israel. And so what he's doing is removing Jewish people who are opponents of Zionism or Israel as part of a wider purge of the left as a whole. So that's why if you're in the Labour Party today and you're Jewish, you're five times more likely to be expelled than if you're not Jewish. I mean, that's Starmer's war on anti-Semitism. But people call Boris Johnson a liar, which he is, but they don't call Starmer a liar. And I just invite anyone to go onto the web and pulled down the 10 pledges, which are still on Starmer's website for some reason. Every single one of them he's broken. He promised to increase corporation tax for companies, and when Johnson did that, he opposed it. And he talked about a Prevention of War Act and all the rest of it. We haven't heard much of that lately in terms of Ukraine. So, I mean, you have two parties which are virtually identical, Tweedledum and Tweedledee. And that's really what it is about. It's about making the Labour Party safe for capitalism, safe for imperialism. And of course, you expel any Jews or non-Jews who aren't Zionists, who oppose Zionism.
So do you think the Palestine Solidarity Campaign, after this constitutional change, Tony, is actually going to be able to make any difference whatsoever for the Palestinian cause?
I don't think it will make much difference. I mean, it's an organisation which has raises enough money. It employs, I think, 12 staff. And yet its ability to campaign and the campaigns it's waged have been minimal. It failed, remarkably, to support David Miller at Bristol University. I think you're particularly aware of that campaign because that's where you are based. It bought into the whole anti-Semitism nonsense that David Miller's theories about power groups and lobby groups was somehow anti-Semitic. How can it be? What he's doing is researching into what is true. I mean, these groups do operate. They are dangerous. They should be opposed. I just don't think people should get them out of proportion and they should see where their power originates. But, you know, I mean, groups like the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism and McCarthyite campaigns, whose whole aim and purpose is to cancel those they don't like. You know, the latest target is Loki. It was Ken Loach. It was Shahed Abu-Salama at Sheffield University and so on. So that's what the Zionists are about. They're about cancelling people, but they are a direct threat to freedom of speech in this country. There's no doubt. The Board of Deputies, which is the main Zionist organisation, only represents a minority of Jews. It's not democratic. It's not elected. Every time someone who is anti-Zionist wants to speak at a public meeting, the Board of Deputies try to get the meeting cancelled, try to get the premises to withdraw permission to speak. That was before COVID, of course. Zoom now has taken over. But yes, I mean, that's really what it's about, isn't it? So Zionism, not only in Britain, but in the United States with its attempt to make BDS illegal. It's amazing. As soon as Russia invades Ukraine, which I don't support, but mass sanctions automatically imposed on Russia. No one says they're racist. And yet, if you advocate sanctions against Israel, that's automatically branded anti-Semitic, which is rubbish. They make the comparison with the SA's siege on Jewish shops in Berlin 1933. What they fail to miss or understand is that in 1933, when Hitler came to power, Jews across the world launched an international boycott of Nazi Germany. And who was opposed? The Zionist movement. They preferred to trade with Hitler than to topple him. That's the sad reality.
That's right. They actually even broke the US boycott, didn't they? Famously. But look, Tony, the Russians are big players down in the Middle East, particularly in Syria. I wonder what you make of what's been going on in Ukraine, if it's got any relationship to what's been happening in the Middle East.
No, I don't think there's any direct relationship. I mean, certainly there's a tangential relationship. I mean, but what's happening in Ukraine, I mean, the cause of it, I think, is pretty clear. You only have to listen to the lectures by John Mearsheimer, which is NATO expansion, contrary to all the promises that were given at the time of German reunification, that it would not expand into Eastern Europe. America has broken every single one of those pledges. And not surprisingly, of course, Russia doesn't want nuclear missiles on its borders. And the war could have been avoided if Ukraine had declared its neutrality. Zelensky, who's in bed with the neo-Nazi Azov battalion, refused. And so he's seen all the carnage and destruction that's taken place. It's a direct result of Ukraine being a plaything and a pawn in the hands of the United States and NATO.
What do you make of these claims about Russian war crimes at the weekend in Bucha? Apparently, the Russians, before they left the town and ceded it back to the Ukrainian army, have massacred a load of civilians in the street.
I've heard both versions. I would treat them, obviously, with a degree of caution. I simply don't know what the truth is, but I'm quite prepared to accept that the Russian troops have committed war crimes. However, I also think it's very clear that the Azov battalion in Mariupol and elsewhere has probably committed equally horrific, if not more horrific, crimes, especially against minorities like the Roma. The West is not covering that. The media is not interested in what Azov is doing. it's solely focused on the Russians. Where you have a war, you will almost always have war crimes. That's the tragedy of war, and that's why war must be avoided. So I'm not suggesting the Russians are somehow saints. They're not. But we know the hypocrisy involved when it comes to certain countries like Saudi Arabia. The West has a blind spot. 300,000 more plus Yemenis have died in the Saudi bombing. They've bombed wedding parties, schools, clinics. Where has that been in the mass media? It's been conspicuous by its absence. So there is this total BBC hypocrisy that they only see the crimes of the enemy and they don't see the crimes of their own friends. I mean, I'm prepared to accept that Russia's committed war crimes. I'm not going to dispute it. I don't know the particulars of Bucha or other places, but it's quite feasible, and I don't think anyone should justify that. But it has to be put in a context, and that context is what our own side, the Ukrainian army, very well equipped by NATO, is also doing.
Tony, how do listeners follow your work? Whereabouts can people read some of your articles, etc.?
They can go to my blog. It's www.azvsas.blogspot.com, or alternatively, just go to tonygreenstein.com. And I, over the last 13 years, I've produced something like 3,300 articles. I've written about 250 articles for the Weekly Worker, so you could go to that as well. But I've written many other articles. You can Google Guardian and Tony Greenstein. I used to write for Commenters Free, but, you know, Jonathan Friedland and those of a similar inclination put the kibosh on that. The Zionists complained, of course, that this was unacceptable, and I was taken off. But, I mean, what I've written is quite widely available on the internet, and I'm bringing out a book soon on Zionism during the Holocaust, which will tell the true story of what happened before, during and after the Holocaust, and the way the Zionists have weaponized the Holocaust. They keep telling us that Zelensky is Jewish and that he has relatives who died in the Holocaust. Well, I asked myself, which European Jew doesn't have relatives who died in the Holocaust? What's that got to do with what you do today? You can still be a fascist and have relatives who died in the Holocaust. So we have all this propaganda stuff which is coming our way. But I say, I'm bringing out a book which will provide a different scenario to the one that most people are aware of.
Well, you'll probably be labelled a Holocaust denier, Tony.
I think that would be difficult because there's nothing in my book which denies the Holocaust. The Holocaust happened. If anyone is the Holocaust denier, it is the Zionists. Because during the Holocaust, they played it down and even denied it was happening. And the Zionist press, the Palestinian Zionist press, denied that there was a Holocaust. They played it down. They said, don't exaggerate. They were printing Nazi press releases and stories from the Nazi press. Ostland was one example. Pavakor, the Zionist news agency, again, was reproducing sometimes these press releases. They can obviously make that claim, but there's no foundation to it. There's no doubt it was a Holocaust, not just of Jews, of Roma, of the disabled, of Poles. 3 million Poles died, 20 million Russians. So the Jewish Holocaust has to be seen in context. It was not a unique event. What the Nazis did, unfortunately, has been repeated. I mean, there have been other horrific massacres as well. Rwanda, for example, the Armenian Holocaust, which the Zionists have gone out of their way in order to deny, in order to cultivate relations with the Turkish regime. So Holocausts are not unique. I mean, the African slave trade maybe took 20 million Africans. I mean, that is the tragedy of imperialism. That is what happens. And that's what we have to oppose. But no, yes, I mean, I'm sure I'll be called an anti-Semite. In fact, the book's been called anti-Semitic, even though Zionists haven't seen a single word of it. So we know what they're about, you know. I mean, Emma Watson was an anti-Semite. Who isn't an anti-Semite these days? So That doesn't particularly worry me.
Okay, Tony Greenstein, thanks very much for joining us.
Right, thank you, Tony.